welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you drama in this hour. Later on from the Helen Hayes Theater from 1941. But first, an audition never heard on network radio, but for consideration for the networks, called An American Family Saga, released as an audition on August 13th, 1944.
We now bring you An American Family Saga. The American Family Saga is dedicated to the home. God gave all men, all earth, to love. But since our hearts are small, ordained for each, one spot should prove beloved over all. Kipling said that. Tonight's scene is entitled Introduction to the Mills. The opening commercial will be presented here. This saga of a modern American family is neither an expose of youth's foibles nor an accusation against the older generation. It is merely a cross-section of the life of one family. Controversial subjects are dealt with from each individual character's point of view and have no further purpose than to explain certain given types of personalities which exist in American society today. Every man with a growing family these days has problems no other father in history has had to face. These episodes deal with the family of George Mills, successful Bay City insurance broker, who has reached the peak of middle life and is inclined toward contentment with himself and the manner in which he has carried on his life work. Because you're to become so intimately acquainted with the Mills family, we want you to know them at once. First, you must know Mrs. George Mills.
Good evening.
And now, Mr. Mills.
Good evening. What with the coming election and turn of events in the war, we're having rather an eventful fall, eh?
Yes, we are indeed, sir.
Yes, indeed. The world's full of a number of things, and all of them of great moment to the businessman. All of them.
I'm certain of it. And now, Miss Judith Mills. Judith, may I tell your age?
Why, of course.
Thank you. Judith is the eldest daughter. She is 26. Good looking, too.
Thank you.
And now I want you to meet the hero of the Mills family. His name is John. John is 28, 2 years older than Judith. He was an aviator in the present war and was a casualty. He's coming now. One of John's legs was badly injured. He'll use a cane the rest of his life. Oh, John, come here. Do you mind? This is Lieutenant John Mills.
Oh, please. Forget that lieutenant rubbish, will you? I mean, forget everything about war.
Why, of course, John.
Thanks.
There are twins in the Mills family, a girl and a boy, Eve and Eden. They're just coming up 18. Let me introduce Eve first.
Oh, no, you don't. Eden and I go in pairs.
Sure. We team up on everything.
Well, then, may I introduce the team of Eve and Eden?
Thanks a lot.
See you some more. We got a date. You know where, Eden?
Sure, we'll make it.
There's a pair for you. Straightforward, unrestrained, lovable. You'll like them in spite of yourself. And now just one more member of the family to be accounted for. And really, I don't know how to account for him. He slipped into the family by mistake, I think. Anyway, here he is, 14-year-old Roger Mills.
Good evening. Say, mister, look at this Mustang model. Made it myself. Pretty slick, huh?
Wait a minute, Roddy. We'll talk about airplanes another time, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, sir.
And so this brings you the Mills family. George Mills, his wife Ellen Mills, John, 28, Judith, 26, Eve and Eden, 17, and Roddy, 14. The story opens in the Mills beach home, where it stands overlooking California Bay in the residential section of Bay City. Mr. and Mrs. Mills are entertaining Judge Charles Stone, family friend and counselor.
Poke up the fire, George.
Judge, comfortable?
Perfectly, Ellen.
I've got a fireplace complex, I guess, Charles. Remember when we were kids, how we used to huddle about the old heater when you came over at my place in the evening?
I remember, George.
Way back in those days, I swore I'd have a fireplace. There, that's better.
He's even got a fireplace in our bedroom.
Yes, I like to go to sleep looking into the dying embers.
Oh, that's John coming in.
A fine boy, John. How's he doing with his aviation ground school? Getting many students?
A few. Oh,
sorry. Didn't know you had company.
Come in, John. It's Judge Stone.
Hello, John. How's the boy?
Why, hello, Judge. It's been months since you've been out. I mean to say, mighty glad to see you again.
You're looking mighty fine, lad. How's the ground school?
Here, John. Sit down here beside me.
Thanks, Mother. Mind if I smoke?
Yes, you must, dear.
Thanks. Pretty fair, Judge. What with the war in full blast, I just managed to keep my hand in.
I see.
How about your business, Judge? Just as many folk able to pay for their crimes as ever?
Yeah, I'm afraid that's true, John. People seem to have just as much time to devote behind the bars, just as many lives to give on the gallows as in ordinary times.
More. Papers don't print anything but crime anymore. Crime and war. What's the world coming to, Charles?
In a way, that's true, George. There is a restlessness. It's the younger generation that's fermenting.
You're speaking about the younger generation, too young to fight, of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
The younger generation. It ought to be spanked and sent to bed.
Like you spank and send to bed Eve and Eden.
John.
It's just such people as you, John, who make this unrest. Your half-baked cynicism, your refusal to take the present structure of social life seriously, your preference to risking your neck in an airplane to coming into a good, solid business and taking a partnership with your father.
George, no, dear. Let's not go over that again. John, 28. It's his privilege to choose his work.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry, George. Eden will soon be out of school, and you'll have a mighty fine partner in him.
That harum-scarum kid. Why, he's one big brainstorm after another. Charles, when we were 17 years old, we didn't run around doing as we pleased, did we?
Well, now, George, it's pretty hard to look back 40 years and tell just what we did do. Doesn't seem as though we did.
No, of course we didn't.
If you're worrying about your family, you're doing so needlessly. You've got a mighty fine group of young men and women. You should be proud of them.
Oh, I'm not worrying about them. They wouldn't do anything wrong. It isn't that. It's just things like John's aviation business here. Why should any sane young man prefer to spend his life flying around in an airship when he could be amassing a good-sized bank account? Why do Eve and Eden keep harping on freedom, more freedom? Why, even Roger, 14 years old, mind you. Even he springs wild-eyed sophistry about personal rights. I ask you, what is the world coming to?
Judge, I'm afraid you've struck George's weak spot.
That's an important question in any family man's life, Ellen. In fact, I'd say it was the key to the whole turbulent situation in the United States today.
It's the first important step. A tremendous social revolution that's taking place in this country.
Social revolution, rot. You and your social revolution.
George, I think John's nearer the truth than you suspect.
Revolution means internal warfare.
Yes, Dad. The sort of war we're participating in this moment. War of progress with conservatism.
I suppose you're trying to get over the idea that it's more progressive to fly a kite than to build a good, sound business.
No, Dad, but progress is built on unrest. Conservatism on self-satisfaction.
Why shouldn't I be satisfied? Haven't I worked hard all my life? Haven't I built a business that has put myself and my family in comfortable circumstances for the rest of their lives? Haven't I given my children good educations? Haven't I taught them the laws of the land and the laws of God? Why shouldn't I gain a little comfort from the fact that I've done my work well?
George, please, dear, don't work yourself up like this. You know you don't sleep well after an argument.
Dad, don't misunderstand me. I don't belittle your efforts. I mean to say, I think you've lived splendidly, according to your lights.
Not according to my lights alone. But according to the standards of thinking men throughout the country.
Yes, men of your generation. A generation that led the world into the most horrible catastrophe known to man.
You mean the war, John?
Yes, Judge. This war and the last one. That's what your generation of thinking men did for the world. And now my generation, Eve's generation, Roddy's generation, have to come along and clean up the mess.
There'd be no mess to clean up if you'd all put your shoulder to the wheel and push together.
Yes, Dad, but where would you have us push? Right back into the old rut that led to this war? We'd better watch out or you'd have us push ourselves into still another war.
Nonsense.
There'll never be another war.
There never will be as far as I'm concerned. Nor as far as Eden's concerned, nor Roddy, if I can help it.
I hope there won't be.
I mean to say, I'm for this younger generation, heart and soul. No matter what they do, they're going to make us a different sort of country. They're going to make mistakes, lots of them. But they're going to pay for their mistakes and go right on until they've found out what it's all about and why.
But, John, unrest leads to war as well as to progress.
So does the old conservative dog-eat-dog system. That's been proved. We might as well have war attempting to progress as to have it because a few selfish statesmen and financiers can't get along.
Hmm? Oh, is that you, Judith? She went to the opera. She should be getting in. Judith, come in, dear. Judge Stone is here. That's strange. George, will you see who it is?
Yeah. Oh, John, you must have left the front door ajar when you came in.
Oh, Dad, let go of my ear.
March right in here to your mother, young man.
Oh, you're hurting my ear.
Roger, what are you doing up and dressed? I sent you to bed at 9 o'clock. Here it is after 11.
Yes, ma'am.
Answer your mother. What were you doing out when you were told to be in bed?
Nothing.
Roddy, aren't you going to speak to Judge Stone?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Roddy.
Now, please, Roger, won't you tell Mother where you've been?
Outdoors.
Where outdoors?
Well, just around places.
Did you go to the theater?
No, Mother.
Let me take him upstairs. I'll get it out of him.
Just a moment, George. Roger, whom were you with?
A bunch of the fellas.
What fellas? Your scout troop?
No, Mother.
I say, old kid.
Yes, sir?
Why don't you fess up and take your medicine? That's the only way, you know.
But I can't, John. I promised.
I see. Involve someone else, then.
Yes, sir.
Well, look here. Couldn't you sort of tell it so that you wouldn't peach on anyone else? You see, it's Dad's and Mother's right to know about you.
Yes, sir. I could do that.
Nonsense.
George, please. Go on, Roger.
Whoa. Us kids has got a secret society, and there was a special meeting tonight, and so everybody had to be there.
What sort of a secret society?
Just a secret society.
What was this special meeting about?
Oh, nothing.
Special meeting for the election of officers, maybe. Right, Roger?
No, sir. It was ladies' night.
What?
Now, John, please, now. This is all very painful. Roger, what do you mean, dear, ladies' night? You mean there were little girls present?
Oh, no, ma'am. Well, it was a special meeting for everybody what belongs to the club to tell how much they don't like girls.
Oh, my. Oh.
Hey, what's all this hilarity about? Am I missing something?
Come on in, Judith. Sit in on the family inquisition.
Oh, Roddy's on the carpet again, eh? Oh, good evening, Judge Stone.
My dear, how charming you are.
Sit still, Judge. I'm afraid you're an old flatterer.
Indeed not. Was the opera enjoyable?
Oh, it was all right.
Mother, may I go now?
You cannot.
Yes, sir.
So you boys got together to tell how much you dislike girls, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Was that all?
Well, and everybody had to swear he wouldn't ever have anything to do with them.
I suppose that includes your mother and sisters.
Oh, no, sir. Oh, just that we wouldn't go to old places with him or nothing.
Roddy, your English is miserable.
Oh.
Where did you meet?
Father, didn't you hear your father speak to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, why don't you answer him?
Well, it's a secret.
Nonsense. There'll be no secrets in this household as long as I'm the head of it.
I hope you don't mean that literally, Dad.
That's just how I do mean it, John.
Oh, not really.
Dad's absolutely right, John.
Well. Then supposing you begin, Judith, by unburdening all the little secrets inside you at the family conference.
Oh, Judith, what does he mean?
I don't know, Mother. It's just another one of his hopeless jokes, I suppose.
Nothing of the kind. I mean to sit there and say that nothing has ever occurred in your life that isn't a secret from your family?
Well, how perfectly beastly. Of course there's nothing.
You poor girl.
That's enough of that. Roger, I'll give you until morning to think it over. I want you to come to me before breakfast and tell me where this meeting was held and who was present.
I won't tell.
You will, or you'll get the worst whipping you've ever received. Now go to bed, and I hope you'll think better of your decision in the morning.
Yes, sir. Father.
Well?
Couldn't I have the whipping tonight, sir? I'd sleep better if it was over.
March up to bed, sir. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir. Night, Dreadstone.
Good night, Roger.
Night, Mother.
Good night, Roger.
Charles, what are you going to do with a stubborn child like that? I know I'll have to whip him in the morning.
George, have you ever been able to whip anything out of him?
No.
Then why do you continue to whip him? You admit it does no good.
He has to be punished.
I thought whipping was to correct, not to punish.
Punishment is a method of correction. Certainly, as a jurist, you should know that.
But you've admitted that it doesn't change the boy. Why don't you look for a method of correction that will correct?
Dad, I'm sorry.
I thought I sent you to bed.
Yes, sir. I just came down to tell you goodnight. I'm sorry I went up without saying it.
Oh. Good night, son.
You see, George, your sons want to be close to you. Why don't you try to understand their viewpoint a little more instead of always trying to bend them to yours?
But the boy's in the wrong. He disobeyed his mother.
You think he told you the truth about what he did tonight, don't you?
Thank God my children don't lie.
Well, that's something to be mighty proud of, George. But why do you suppose Roddy sneaked out on you tonight?
Because he knew I wouldn't consent to his being out this late.
Yes, he knew you wouldn't understand him. You'd dismiss his request without a second thought.
And that's right. A boy 14 years old has no business out at midnight.
Have you ever tried to explain that to him?
Why should I? Isn't the reason perfectly plain?
To you, yes. But your reason and his desires can't possibly coincide. Therefore, you've got to make his reasoning power work, too. You've got to make him believe that staying out until midnight isn't good for him. And to do that, you've got to make him reason it out for himself.
Great stuff, Judge. Dad, I'll bet $10 you don't know where Eve and Eden are tonight.
Well, of course we do, John.
Do you know, Dad?
I most certainly do. Your mother informed me before they went out this evening.
But neither of them told you, did they?
No, John. I think it's sufficient that they should tell their mother.
John, I think you're horrid to talk to Father like this. Just because you were shot down in the war, you seem to think that...
Judy, please, dear, Judy. John has asked you never to bring up the war in connection with himself.
It's a nice little habit of Judith's.
Well, let's not talk about it anymore. John, Eve and Eden have gone down the shore road to the Elliott summer home. They promised to be in by one. The Elliots are perfectly lovely people.
Elliott's summer place, eh?
Here, I can reach it. I'll answer. Hello? Hello, is that you, Eden? What? Oh, I'm sorry. I mistook you for my brother. Just a moment. Someone wants to talk to you, John.
Excuse me, please. Thanks, Judy. Hello? Yes? Yes, I see. I see. Well, keep the rest of it till I get there. Where are you? All right, stand by. I'll be along. Goodbye.
If that wasn't Eden's voice...
You've got the most obnoxious imagination, Judith. Mother, will you please excuse me? It's a most important call.
Yes, of course, John. I hope there's nothing the matter, dear.
No, don't you worry. Dad, may I use your car for a couple of hours? I let the twins have mine for tonight.
Seems very strange that you should be having sudden calls at midnight, John.
If you'd rather I didn't take it, I'll call a taxi.
Oh, you're welcome to it.
Thanks. You'll excuse me, won't you, Judge?
Of course, John.
It's been a real pleasure to see you again. Good night, everyone.
Hey, they're in the receiving room, John. Right in here.
Lead on, Sarge. Well, hello, kids. I mean to say, thinking of taking up permanent residence in the Southgate City Prison?
Oh, John. John.
Oh, I say, Eve, take it easy. Things aren't so bad. How about it, Eden?
They're pretty bad, John.
Mind shutting the door, Sarge? All right, now, everyone grab himself a seat. I brought Police Sergeant McCurdy along to hear the sad tale.
Hello, Sergeant.
Good evening, my boy. Seems like old times when I was doing patrol duty in your neighborhood. Many's the time I got you out of scrapes when you were a small tad.
Yeah, but nothing like this.
So you shot Jimmy Elliott, did you?
He did not. It was I.
better and better. But isn't 17 pretty young to start shooting up your men?
Well, he had it coming.
Okay, let's have the whole story. And by the way, I might add that the Southgate police seem to be thoroughly mystified as to who did the shooting. So don't spill it after we get out of here.
Well, then how did you know?
Just a shot in the dark. Heard at the desk that young Elliot had been shot and had an idea, that was all. Now then, from the beginning.
Well, what about Sergeant McCurdy? Won't he have to report what we tell?
No, this ain't my territory, son. And besides, I wish I had a red cent for everything that I've disremembered.
You begin, Eve.
Well, it started when Jimmy suggested that I go with him downstairs to his gun room.
Just a moment. How many were there at this party?
About 30.
Including the grown folks?
Well, there weren't any grown folks.
What about servants?
There weren't any servants.
That's what I thought. Must have been a good party.
It was, till Jimmy got fresh with Eve.
Well, that was down in the gun room, I suppose?
Yes.
You two were alone?
Yes. You see, I thought it'd be all right. Everyone was jolly, and we had the run of the house, and so when Jimmy suggested we slip away and go downstairs, well, I followed him.
Quite natural. You'd never suspect a host of being anything but a good sport as well as a good host. Too bad it doesn't usually work out that way.
Yes, that's what I found out. Well, as soon as we got down there, he grabbed me and kissed me.
I hope you didn't shoot him for that.
No, of course not. I didn't even hold out when he mauled me a little.
Mauled? So that's what they do these days.
Well, they call it a lot of things these days, John. But I'll be thinking it's still the old-fashioned spooning.
I guess you're right at that, Mac. Well, let's have the rest of it, youngster.
But then he said something to me. Well, I told him to leave me alone, and I started for the door.
Bad business. I mean to say, never take your eyes off a wild animal. Stare him out of countenance. A girl with nerve can stare herself out of a lot of bad situations.
Well, he ran after me and grabbed me, and I jerked away from him and got a glass showcase between us, and there were a lot of guns in it.
Enter the gun. I hope you wiped the fingerprints off after you got through with it.
Oh, I did.
You did?
Well, yes, of course.
Well, I'll be a son of a gun. Can you tie that now?
Did I mention something about nerve? Well, what happened?
Well, I reached into the case and pulled out a pistol and told Jimmy to keep away and leave me alone or I'd shoot.
Quite the right procedure. Technique's above reproach so far. What about it, Mac?
Well, then, well, he laughed at me and said the gun wasn't loaded and leaned across the case and grabbed my hand and, well, I pulled the trigger.
And young Mr. Elliot was mistaken. The gun was loaded.
Yes.
At this point, you calmly polished the gun off on your handkerchief and replaced it in the cabinet.
No, on my step-ins.
On your... My dear child, why did you do that?
Because the gun was oily and I didn't want to get it on anything that would show.
But wouldn't your slip have done just as well?
Well, I didn't have any slip on.
Mac, what do you think of my sister?
You can't beat this younger generation, John. I've said it before and I say it again. They'll go you one better every time.
And after you replaced the gun, young woman, then what happened?
Well, the crowd was running downstairs, and I didn't have a chance to get out of the room, so I hid in a closet.
Well, I heard the shot upstairs. Everyone did. When we opened the door in the gun room and found Jimmy wounded and unconscious, well, there was an awful scramble.
Yes, and when everyone was crowding around Jimmy, I sneaked out of the closet and joined them.
Well, he was only shot in the shoulder.
Yes, I know. Then no one knows who shot the boy but us and young Elliot himself.
Well, that's all. And Jimmy won't dare tell. He's been in bad before, and he knows that if it ever gets out just what happened and caused a scandal, well, his father will take his car and allowance away from him. Mr. Elliot's threatened to already.
Then you can depend upon Elliot to tell a suitable story when he feels like talking.
You bet.
Yes, but where are all the others? Did they all run out on you?
I should say not. We all stuck together. See, they brought us all down here, and their folks came and got them. Most of them live down here in Southgate.
Released in care of their parents, huh?
Yeah.
John, you didn't tell Mother and Dad where we were, did you?
Of course he didn't.
No. And if I were you youngsters, I'd keep pretty quiet about it.
Oh, gee, I'm glad. They wouldn't understand. They'd think I did wrong to shoot him.
Well, what about it? Didn't you?
Well, do you think I did?
The law says you did.
Well, I'm not. I'm not sorry. He had it coming.
Are you going to get us out of here without making a row?
What about it, Mac? Think you can get the twins' names erased from the blotter? Keep the thing covered up without too much juggling?
Yeah, but They won't stay off long if young Elliot squawks.
Listen, Sergeant, I tell you, I know he won't open his mouth.
I don't know about it. He sounds like a contemptible rat to me.
He is not. He's just too fresh.
Oh? Can you beat that now? Shooting a guy and then defending him.
Just fresh, huh?
Yes. It's just between Jimmy and me. He lost, and he'll be a good sport about it, you see.
I'll tell you what, Mac. If he shows signs of weakening, spill him an earful of what happens to little boys who give wild parties in this year of our Lord, 1944. I mean to say, your uniform will add a lot of weight to your words.
Well, we'll see about it.
Come on, you kids. Get on your coats. You're going home in my car just as though nothing had happened. I've got Dad's machine.
Gee, John, you're a good egg. Thanks awfully.
Yeah, you do me more good than a million of Dad's lectures.
Mind now you don't get into more trouble on the way home. Come on, Mac.
Eat your eggs, George, while they're still hot, huh? Oh, here, have this whole wheat toast.
But why isn't Roger down to breakfast?
He'll be down, dear. Well, did you and Eden have a nice time at the Elliott party last night, Eve?
Oh, it was all right.
I hope you acted like a lady, Eve.
Sure. Why not?
Oh, I was just wondering. Can't tell what mischief kids will get into these days.
Do you notice that they usually find some way of getting out?
Oh, what sort of trouble could a girl get into at a nice home like the Elliott?
That's all right, Mother. I was just needling Eve a little.
Oh, here's Roddy. Here's Roddy now. Come to the table, Sonny.
Roger, don't you know you're to be down at 8 o'clock sharp for breakfast?
Oh, yes, sir. I was out in the garden. I didn't know it was so late. Here, sir. I brought the paper in off the steps.
Well, sit down and eat, or you'll be late for school.
Yes, sir. Mother, may I have my eggs boiled instead of poached this morning?
Mm-hmm. Go out in the kitchen and ask Jenny to fix them.
Yes, ma'am. And may I have strawberry jam?
This crabapple jelly should do very nicely.
Yes, sir.
George, dear, you're not going to say anything more about Roger's secret society, I hope.
What? Of course. You'll think I'm a weak sort of father to let the matter drop.
Very well, dear. You know what's best.
Would you like me to hold him so you can hit him harder?
John, now that's enough.
I'm sorry, Dad. I beg your pardon.
Never mind, John. Someday, when you're a father yourself, you'll understand better just what I'm up against.
I don't think I'll ever have the nerve to try. Looks to me to be the most thankless task in the world.
Please excuse me. If I don't glance at the headlines now, I'll not see them today.
Go ahead, George. Read your paper.
What's this? Host shot at shore road party.
Dad!
James Elliott Jr. wounded during fate of younger set. Eden, Eve, get up from that table and come into my den immediately.
But Daddy, I...
Oh, very well.
Sure, come on. Let's have it and get it over.
A closing commercial dramatized by members of the family will be presented here. You have just heard the first episode of American Family Saga, written and produced by Carlton E. Morse. The second episode, entitled Younger Generation Messes Around, will be brought to you next week at this same time.
An American Saga on Tuned to Yesterday. That demo or audition broadcast was created on August 13th, 1944. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now, upon further research into this next broadcast, it turns out that this might be rarer than I first thought. It's a copy of the Helen Hayes Theater called Let the Hurricane Roar, heard on October 19th, 1941 on CBS. It was originally heard on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And doesn't appear to be known to be in circulation, that is, until now. And to this end, though we know not all old-time radio programs are created equal in terms of sound fidelity, this one has some flutter among some other issues, but it's still good listening next to this very rare broadcast of the Helen Hayes Theater.
Lipton C presents Helen Hayes. Good evening. evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, America's Best Loved Tea, Lipton Tea, presents America's Best Loved Actress, Helen Hayes. For tonight's performance, Miss Hayes has selected Let the Hurricane Roar, adapted by Therese Lewis from the novel of Rose Wilder Lane. And now, Lipton Tea is proud to present Helen Hayes. The time, the late 1870s. The place, a growing settlement in the Middle West. And a young girl is writing a letter.
Dear Aunt Emily, it's been too long since last I wrote you. But when you read further, I believe you will understand this seeming negligence. For I have glorious news indeed. Yesterday, in the afternoon, Charles and I stood up together and spoke our vows. And afterwards, our friends and families joined with us in celebration. There was dancing in the barn, and whenever the fiddles were silent, much general laughter aimed at dear Charles and me. But finally, we did slip outside away from the others.
We'll have a fine life. We'll make our way together.
Always together. It's what I've been dreaming since we were children.
Oh, sweetheart, I've never seen you so pretty.
That's the moonlight.
There wasn't a moon out this afternoon. It's you.
It's being happy. Oh, we better go back, Charles, or they'll be out here teasing us.
No, wait. Caroline, look out there at the settlement. When we were growing up, it was just stumpy fields and forests. But other settlers have been moving in right along until now.
I know. The best is already gone.
The free land is farther west. It's rich there, they say, and level and without forest.
And it's in you to go there.
It's in me to build you a fine home one day. A big white house with two bedrooms and a parlor. Out there, don't you see? We'd be in at the start. We could grow up with the greatest country on earth.
Oh, Charles, I do see it would be our chance.
But, Caroline, you'd be leaving your family forever. It'll take long, long months. We'll have to stop all the way while I work for supplies. There'll be nothing but wind and sun and endless miles of prairie. Oh, hang it. Maybe we'd better not.
Yes, Charles, what I want as much as you. And this is more important than the wind and the sun and the travel. This is our whole future together.
You're right. You do see.
So we'll tell our parents, and as soon as we get ready, we'll go.
Caroline, Amy.
Listen. They're singing your favorite hymn. Dearest mother and all, I send you this word of our continued welfare from a railroad camp where Charles has been working the past month. Now that we have money for additional supplies, we're ready to set out again and will soon be on our way. Charles, you shouldn't have bought me that calico.
Don't you like it?
I love it, but 15 yards. We have to be thrifty.
You were due for a present. By the way, did you remember to kiss me for it?
Yes, I did. But it's such nice calico, I really think I ought to thank you again.
Now, I like that idea. Come here, squaw.
Squaw?
I've never seen one with a browner face. Come here, I want to kiss it.
Charles.
Oh, my little squaw. I'll bet your baby's going to be a papoose.
Well, Charles, it's your baby, too.
What? Oh, Jean! Jean!
Charles, what were you talking about to that man before we left?
He was telling me about a homestead in the Dakotas. 50 acres of land already broken and a sod barn. Even a creek.
Well?
Oh, it's out of the question for us.
Why?
He lived in a dugout. Just sod, a hole in the ground.
But Charles, 50 acres already broken. That's better than anything we'd hope to start with.
That man's on his way back because he couldn't stand another winter of loneliness.
Well, you wouldn't have to go away, would you?
No, I'd be there, but you can't have a baby in a place like that. You need neighbor women with you.
It's natural to have babies. I don't want anyone else there when ours is born. Please, Charles. We mustn't let anyone else get a place we want so much. Let's turn back to the land office. We've got to file a claim to that homestead. Dear Mother, I take my pen in hand to let you know that the three of us are well and happy. The baby has borne up wonderfully well. I do wish you could see little Charles John. He would melt your heart, I'm sure. My last letter to you has lain all winter between the pages of our Bible. The first blizzard came in October and prevented its ever being mailed. We were hard-pressed at first to make our dugout snug, but soon the dirt walls were pounded smooth and hard, and Charles had made a small window hole to let in the daylight. Were it not for that window and the cook stove pipe, which sticks up into the grass above us, no one could tell that our home even existed. But that's been a needless concern, for in all these months we've not encountered another human. Charles has been away hunting this afternoon, and I can scarcely wait for him to come home. Charles! Charles!
Caroline, is anything wrong?
No! It's good news! Look over there! See that covered wagon stopped out on the plain?
Well, who in heck...
It's a Swedish couple named Svensson. They stopped the dugout on the way past, and guess what, Charles? They've decided to settle less than a mile away. Just think, we're going to have neighbors. I came as fast as I could. I was at the washing. What is it, Charles?
Do you see the wheat? Caroline, look at it.
I am, dear. It must be a very good crop.
Good? It's... Why, in places it stands right up to my armpits. You know wheat's worth a dollar a bushel out here? This crop's going to bring $2,000.
Oh, Charles, $2,000. Could we... Do you suppose we could buy a cow?
A cow? A herd of cows. Caroline, you goose, we're rich. Rich.
Please, Mrs. Svensson.
We have three hives now. We love to be. We work hard as we do. Well, goodbye now.
Goodbye, Mrs. Svensson. Thanks so much for your visit. I'll be over to see you soon.
And thanks for the honey.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Caroline. Caroline, look here in the barn. I bought some things.
Oh, Charles, you shouldn't.
Look at that mowing machine. Oh. Brand new. The latest thing.
It's so big, Charles, and shiny. But you didn't go in debt, did you?
We're good for it, aren't we? You should have heard the excitement in town when I told them about our wheat. I ought to be cutting it about the end of next week.
That's why they gave you credit?
Of course. We won't spend another winter in that hole in the ground. Caroline, I'm going to start on the house. A white-painted house with two bedrooms and a parlor. We're on our way at last.
And you've done it all yourself. You've worked hard and well, and you've persevered. Oh, I'm so proud of you.
Oh, you're the one. You've had the confidence. But now, thank God, I know I'm going to be able to take care of you and the baby the way I ought to.
Charles. Charles, that's Mrs. Svensson. We better see.
What's she pointing up at?
Look, that cloud over the sun. I've never seen anything like it. And how fast it's moving. What is it? Tell us, please.
Oh, goodness, the matter.
Silence. I don't know what you're saying.
Caroline, that cloud, it's traveling like the wind.
Oh, Mrs. Svensson, you must tell us what's wrong.
The sky! The sky!
Caroline, listen. What do you make? Good God in heaven.
Charles! Charles! It's alive! Millions of them!
Quick! We gotta start fire! Roger! The wheat! We've got to save it! Well, Caroline, the jig's up. The wheat's gone, every spear of it. Why don't you say something?
I guess if there isn't any wheat, we'll get along without it. We always have.
But we've never been in debt before. Oh, Caroline, if I hadn't been such a fool.
There, it's all right. I was afraid you were going to get sunstroke out there all day.
Not even flower for this winter. Not even seed.
Charles. Charles! Charles, I can't stand it!
Caroline, you're sick.
No! Kill them! Kill them! Look, the grasshoppers, they're coming in over the door. They're all over. Charles, dear, what happened in town?
I couldn't get a job. Everybody's looking for work.
There isn't a blade of grass left anywhere. The grasshoppers took everything.
Never mind. We'll get along.
No, we won't. My credit's no good. We've got to give up the homestead and get out.
Give up the...
Maybe I can find work if I get far enough east.
Oh. But, Charles, why not just go east until next winter? Don't give up the homestead.
How can we make a trip like that and come back inside of 5 months? I'd have to travel slow with a baby, and I'd be working all the way to keep us going.
But you don't understand.
Besides, claim jumpers would grab this place as soon as we got out.
Nobody's going to grab it while I'm here.
What?
I mean it, Charles. We've got a home, and we're going to keep it.
But you don't think you're going to...
Yes, I do. You go east alone. I'll be all right. The Svensons are here.
No. No, I won't even think of it.
You've got to. It's the only way. We still have enough supplies to take care of me till October.
I said I'd never leave you. That was why we came.
It's different now. Charles, John makes it different. We have to hold on. No country's going to feed us with a spoon.
Caroline.
So you must go, Charles, and without fear that I'll ever be afraid. We're strong enough for the West. You'll come back in the fall, and we'll have another winter here together, just the three of us. And then it'll be spring again. A new crop, Charles. And a new year. Dear Charles, to know that you're safe and have found work is more joyous news than I can say. Nothing here has changed much in the weeks you've been gone, except that Mr. Loftus came out from the store and attached the team to square his bill. But do not be upset, Charles, as there is a laughable side to this. Now Mr. Loftus will have to feed the team. I asked him to try to send me my mail by some rider passing by. Thus, about an hour ago, your dear letter was finally delivered, and on the very day that Mrs. Svensson at last went into town. Should he bring back still further word from you, it would clearly have a spoiling effect upon me. I am feeling fine, Charles, and your son is fat and sassy. As a matter of fact, the little papoose is... Oh. Mrs. Svensson, is that you?
Yeah. Coming.
Was there a letter? Did you remember to ask?
I hurry all the way. Here it is.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Svensson. Banknotes. Why would he send those?
He make out good, your husband. He wants you to have the things he wants.
No. He's been hurt.
What?
His leg. He broke it working at the mill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He can't travel till it mends. He'll come as soon as he can.
He get well quick. He's a strong man.
He says they're being fine to him. That's lucky, isn't it?
You could come and stay with us.
That's what Charles thinks is best. He sent the money for supplies.
Only today I make up mine. We go.
Go?
Since the grasshoppers come, bees all the time hungry. Nothing to eat. Now big bees sting a little bees dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I stay in a place where nothing lives. Not even a bee. Sentence go in 3-4 weeks. And on the way, he take you to town for the winter, yeah?
I don't know, Mr. Svensson. I don't know.
Come in. Well, we come.
Hello, Mrs. Svensson. I'm nearly finished my letter. Just 1 minute.
We have time.
Sure, you get gun now.
What?
Oh, the gun, yes.
That's good. You watch for wolves and bad men.
There, now. Get the address. Why don't you come to town? Why you stay here and make us worry for you?
If Charles weren't hurt and helpless, he'd be the one protecting the place. But it's up to me now.
He wouldn't like you staying here all alone.
He won't know. I've just written that I'm moving in with you.
Ah, you good boy.
I want something to come of all this.
I know.
Here, this is the list of supplies I want, and here's the money.
Yeah, we see they come soon, before the snow.
Yes.
Well, you go now.
I'll be thinking of you every day. And I hope everything back east turns out just as you want it to. I hope everything's fine.
Rest of his life now. Benson, just a hard man in the city.
Well, he try hard to make out here. Goodbye. You watch out.
Yes, I'll watch out.
Good luck. God bless you. goodbye. Hello, you little papoose. You won't get sick, will you? You're strong. You'll be all right, won't you? We're safe here. We've got the gun and... Oh, please, now, John. Please keep well.
This, my dear, is the beginning of a letter you will never hold in your hand. For there is now no way to get it to the post, and when you come back, I shall tear it up. Even if something should happen to me, you will never find these foolish, frightened words, for I hide them in a place you will not discover. Mr. Svensson was right about the wolves coming. I often hear them howling down by the creek, and that of all sounds is to me the most terrifying. I keep thinking what would happen to the baby if one day while I was out... I have the gun. Nothing like that can happen. It has been snowing now for 7 days. There is no more fuel in the dugout, and it isn't possible to make my way to the barn. This morning, the only wood that remained was heavy furniture and the cradle. Having foolishly left the axe in the barn, it had to be the cradle which I could smash with my hands. And Charles, dear, the bird you carved so carefully on the footboard helped today to boil our tea and potatoes. It's too cold to write on, so I will hide these pages and lie down with the baby. I know if we stay close together under the bedding, we can exist for some time in the warmth of our own bodies. I love you, Charles. I love you.
Clear the path, Charles, John. This time without freezing my ears. You see, I learned a lot from the blizzard. Just look out there. You've never seen anything as still as all that. Nothing but air and sun and snow. That, my son, is space. If it makes me feel small, just what it ought to do to you. This 10th time I have sat down at this letter. That much I know. Although I've long since lost my reckoning of time. But it makes little difference so long as each day brings nearer the end of this winter. I haven't left the dugout for 2 days because night before last, just about this time as I was getting ready for bed... Oh, baby, I'm sorry. Go back to sleep now. There, it's all right. It is going to be all right. Charles John went back to sleep. But I kept the lamp lighted and sat up all night watching the paper in the window pane. I was ready to shoot if I saw a paw or a head. But he never found the window, thank God. Just now I looked up and saw the stovepipe trembling. Something must have bumped it from above. There is something on top of the dugout. A wolf could stay there all night. He could be waiting right over the door. Who's there? Listen. Listen to me. I've got a gun. I'm not afraid of outlaws.
Caroline!
Caroline! Caroline!
Oh, Caroline. Caroline. I'm freezing you to death. I've got to shut the door.
Did you get here?
Didn't I tell you I'd come as quick as I could? Oh, Caroline, why did you stay on out here alone?
Tom, your leg.
Oh, it'll be fine as ever for spring plowing. Look, Caroline, I've got $50.
Oh, Charles. Just having you back.
Oh, there's my papoose. There's the little shaver.
He's wonderful, Charles. And two teeth. When you see them.
Caroline, I have a feeling that the worst is already behind me. Can you believe that?
Yes. I believe that from this beginning, there is much to come. All that we do here is new, Charles. And I have borne my son toward a fine, free future. A future of wheat fields and large barns and gracious living in the big white house.
And so Lipton's Tea, America's best-loved tea, has presented America's best-loved actress, Helen Hayes.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed hearing this story. It's a favorite of mine, and I was very glad to do it again for you. And I hope you'll all be listening next Sunday again, ladies and gentlemen, when we're going to do Kitty Foyle.
The Helen Hayes Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from October of 1941 on CBS. And the curtain comes down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.